Call the meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order. Do we have minutes? First order of business I'm going to do is Representative Freiberg, if you had a chance to read the minutes.
Yes, and I will move approval.
Representative Freiberg moves approval of the minutes from May 2nd, 2013. All in favor of the minutes as written, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Ayes have it. The minutes are approved.
I think you had it.
Representative Metsa.
Well, thank you for having me to the committee.
I'll move that House to get on the House File 1823 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Rules Committee.
Well, that sounds good. I do have one author's amendment, the 83. I can give a little description of the bill first, so if you'd like.
Why don't we put it in the order you want? I'll move the A3 amendment to put the bill in the way the author wants it. All in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Well, Mr. Chair, we don't have an A3 amendment. I'm just doing a quick run through here. I'd like to see what it looks like before.
Do you have
A3? I have it right here. Should be right on top.
It might have looked like the bill because the
First Amendment.
Yeah, it does look like the bill.
Did we?
Representative Pipes is nice enough to give me a copy, but I don't see one in my packet, so.
Representative O'Driscoll, that wasn't intentional that we skipped you.
I'm pretty sure that, sure, we've got a good working relationship. So.
Anyway, so did you get a chance to look at the A3 amendment?
We already voted on it.
So okay, we haven't voted on it yet. I stopped the vote before you said.
We're good. I just want to make sure I had it. Thank you, sir.
So all in favor of the A3 amendment to put it in the order that Representative Metsa wants it, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion approved. The amendment's adopted.
Thank
Representative
you,
Metsa, if you want to describe your bill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The basics of this bill, it's a constitutional amendment that would basically give our rights away, handing it over from the legislature here to a citizen, independent citizen council appointed by the Chief Justice, and the governor would be 8 members that each, the Chief Justice and the governor, would get to appoint for a total of 16, each picking the 4 in the majority party control. And essentially what this committee would do is review our salary and compensation and make recommendations to the legislature, thereby taking it out of our hands to be able to vote on our own wage increases or decreases here at the Capitol. That's pretty much it in a nutshell. Some of the dates and stuff are in there, but I'm open to having a discussion, going through some of the other amendments, and hopefully we can get it in the shape it needs to be today to leave with some bipartisan support. I know I've got that in the committee as of now and hope to continue with it going out. So,
any questions of Representative Metsa? Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I heard you say they would make the way that I'm quickly grabbing the actual bill, I'm busy looking at amendments, that they're going to make a recommendation or they're going to set the salary?
They would actually set the
Representative
salary.
Metsa.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I was clear on that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Metsa. I signed on to your bill earlier. Mm-hmm. I like the idea in general, but my concern is just the timing of this, and I think that this is probably something that if we're going to go forward, it's probably something that I think deserves a little bit more public vetting. And I know that even some of the amendments came in late. And it just seems like something of this type of thing that it affects us when it comes in the last week of session. It gets kind of entangled with the other issues of the day. Of course, gay marriage is being heard in the Senate, and we're, you know, in the last week where we're hearing all the omnibus bills, and I'm just wondering why are we doing this now? Why are we having a committee hearing in May to discuss this issue when it's involving setting your own legislative pay? It just, it feels to me a little bit like this is just a little kind of shady doing it this time of year, and I don't mean your intentions are shady. It's just that when I think that might be the perception of the public when we're looking at this during the last days of session, when it can get easily tangled up in all the other bills that are happening. So I feel less comfortable voting for it today than I would have, or I would in say January or February during the regular committee process. And I'm just wondering if you could kind of explain the timing.
Yeah, Representative Betsa. Mr. Chair, committee members, Representative Pepin, basically, I took over the bill about 3 weeks ago, I believe, and Senator Eakin's been working on it on the Senate side for a majority of the session and going through the process of getting people's input. And when I was going through the process here over the last 3 weeks, getting folks to sign on as co-authors, basically took a while. There were a few concerns with some of the language changing from the 2008 constitutional amendment that had passed with bipartisan support back then. And so we went back to the drawing book over the weekend here, addressed most of those concerns, reverting it back into the shape that it was in 2008, more so than the Eakin version this year. And so a lot of it was, you know, incorporating those changes and working with the different legislators that had suggestions and incorporating those. And I guess the reason for getting in this week, I've been bothering leadership to try to get a hearing on it and get it scheduled for about a week and a half, 2 weeks, since I was able to get some of that legwork done. And, you know, with the Senate having voted on a pay raise this year, I just didn't feel as comfortable with that idea and thought I'd much rather vote to give this responsibility to a citizen committee that would be able to handle it. So,
Representative Pippin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Metza. So is it then your intention or your belief that this is something that will hit the House floor? Is that it looks like it's going to rules, and so it's your intention that we would vote on that this year? Is that the impression that you're getting from your leadership, that we will vote on this in the floor this year then?
I mean, I guess
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin. I guess that would be my hope. I guess it'd be a better question for leadership, but I would say that with getting the hearings and having a few other committees scheduled, that they are open to the idea of it being in the general register and being voted on the floor.
Representative Pepin. Representative Dill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is going to end up, this bill, being about the words that are spoken. And Representative Pepin, you said you were a little something nervous about legislation or legislators setting their legislative pay. That's what you said a moment ago. And that isn't what this bill does. In fact, this bill gives away our authority to set the legislative pay. And so I'm not criticizing that. I just want to make sure that when we talk about this in the general context of what it does exactly, that we don't mix the terms so that people get the wrong impressions around the table of what it actually does.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dill. At the point I'm trying to make more is the perception than of what it actually is. I think that some would look at this and say, because of the past recommendations that we've seen, it being much higher than our current salary, I think that the perception in the public will be that this is a pay increase, and that might be not exactly what it is. It would go to a compensation council, which I think if the compensation council had this, it will result in a pay increase, and I know that that's not technically what it says. I think that, personally, I think the public perception, and it's exactly it, it's about perception, I think that that's what the perception will be, that it's a pay increase, whether or not that is, in fact, what it actually is. And and that's the other reason, too, that I'm a little leery about doing it now, is because I wish there were more time to vet this out in the public forum, whereas now when it's, you know, kind of the timing of it, it's something that can easily be lost in the media, maybe won't even be picked up by the media. And so I don't like the timing of it, I guess is my point. But I agree that it doesn't set or raise directly our legislative salary, but that could result.
Representative Dill, did you want to respond? Or?
No, I want to say that I think it's interesting in this committee, as the first year that I've ever served on it, and that I've heard the arguments in this committee about, well, firstly, is I don't hear any arguments from this committee about people that are making huge sums of money off of stock options, because really that's the way I feel about it. I mean, I'm in business to make money, but yet I hear every time that we talk about a group of people that are running a $36 billion general fund operation that we're worth $31,000. And I just think that in order to attract the kind of people from the private sector or even the public sector, that we have to have some expectation that at some point they can be compensated, because it's difficult. I'm sure you know Representative and Representative Drazowski and others and people on our my side of the aisle to hold a second position, and it's hard on employers, and a lot of people aren't able to do that. And I think you're maybe right about the outcome of this, ultimately. And frankly, I hope it is. Because, I mean, realistically, when you people talk about this, and Representative Winkler has said before that this is a part-time job. But, I mean, part-time when you're working 2,080 hours or more. And for people in rural districts that have a 15,000-square-mile district where it takes me 9 hours to drive from Clemenson to Grand Portage one way, that begins to be bordering on unable to, in fact, I'm just going to tell you that I just, for the first time in my life this year, a position that I've held for over 25 years, I no longer have, because I wasn't able to dedicate enough time to it. And the board that I work for, and I came to an agreement that they would find someone else, even though I performed flawlessly. They just didn't believe I, and that's the reason I bring that up, because people get in a trap here about, and frankly, if it's in your blood and you're afraid to lose, then you shouldn't be here in the first place. And that's a general comment.
Mm-hmm. Representative Pugh.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Metz, I see that the bill was dropped just a week ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what the status of this bill is in the Senate.
Representative Metz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pugh. The Senate, I'm not sure on. I know that Senator Eakin has been in touch with Senator Bach, and they may or may not end up giving it a hearing this year. But I know in my discussion with Tom Bach while I was putting this together to kind of get it in the shape and asking him if he'd be interested in helping me out with it, as I was describing to Representative Pepin earlier, I wanted to see it go through and get a vote this year. And so I would hope that they would, but I'm not sure if it will or not. So,
Representative Pugh.
Thank you. I just want to say that I'm just really concerned and disturbed that here we are 8 days from the end of session, and I just think this is a really significant matter. I do agree with Representative Pepin, the comment that she made about what our constituents are going to think about this, and perception becomes people's reality, and they are going to see that this is really all about, you know, coming up with a way to give ourselves a pay increase. And I don't know, I'm just really upset about this 8 days out to be considering something like this, a constitutional amendment. I guess I do have one other question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pugh.
Representative Metz, I'm wondering what the cost is, approximate cost, to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot.
I guess
Representative Bepp.
I don't know off the top of my head. I defer to House Research here.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, I don't remember offhand. I think that it, and some of the other staff or members might remember this. I remember a figure in the neighborhood of $3,000,
two to three.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just I see that there's a need for a small oral amendment on line 1.18. There's the word "formers." It should be "former legislators." And so I would move to strike the S from the end of that word.
Representative Falk moves to strike the S after former, or change formers to former, I guess it would, however the way to say that, but to strike the S on that line to make it grammatically correct. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes. Representative Falk. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman and members, I don't know how fast this is going to go. I don't know. If we pass it, it doesn't necessarily mean that the Senate will pass it this year. But the one thing, but when we're putting a constitutional amendment on the ballot, the important thing is the conversation with the public to pass the amendment. And the earlier we do it, and you know, the best situation might be if we passed it this year, so it was sitting out there, and then the Senate passed it next year, so that we would have. Of course, that means it could very likely come back to the House for different changes, because that would give the longest and most complete discussion with the public, which is what I think this needs. I think the public has to understand the realism of a minimal salary for legislators and what that does to the composition of the body. So I'm sure you don't want everyone to be just like me, who doesn't have any need of any additional financing to stay in this body. As I always said, you know, it pays a little bit better than a volunteer job, and it sure helps not to be the sole support of your family when you're doing it. But I think the longer the conversation we have with the public, the better it will be, and I think passing this now is the best way at this time to lengthen that time.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, sorry. And I want to just respond to Representative Pepin, because having been through this constitutional amendment issue for the last several years, I think it's important to be real clear about the discussion that we have about the amendment, because the folks in the legal profession will look back potentially onto the tapes as to what did we mean. And as to the question of why and the timing, if you look at the green jackets, you will see that the first primary author was scratched out. That was me. Senator Eakin, having come fresh from the House and having looked at this question and having voted for this question, I believe, 4 years ago, where it passed the House, went to the Senate, and died there at the end of session. And I think that process actually moved pretty quick at the end as well. Looking at the issue of the intent to take this out of legislators' hands, just to get it out, because even though we have in our Constitution now the requirement that we cannot raise our own pay, that any pay increase takes effect afterwards, after an election, the perception is there. So let's get the issue out of our hands. Let's give it to professionals. Let's give it to an independent board that can make that decision and have them evaluate private sector, public sector, look at data, and make a decision. So I was an author, and if you want to blame somebody, you can blame me, because Senator Eakin dropped it in. It sat on my desk for a while. I've been involved in a variety of other issues this session, and Representative Metza has such a charming personality, I figured he would be a better author than myself to get this going. So if you look at the green jackets, you'll see my name is stricken and put on as fifth. And that's what Representative Metza, he has gone around and got bipartisan authors on the bill, just like we had 4 years ago. And I believe that's because, get it out of our hands. Get it out of the legislature's hands. It is, I'm sure all of us, when we're talking to folks, people think we may have raised our pay already when the House has not voted on it. So let's put it to the people where they can make a decision and on whether or not to take this question out of our hands to go to a professional independent board. That was my intent with Senator Eakin. Representative Metza shared that belief. I think he's done a good job in a very short period of time trying to build a coalition of authors, and that's why it was introduced relatively late in the system.
And Representative Hansen, I looked online here with and the Senate file 533 was introduced in 218 of this year, so it's been out there for a while. So that goes to that Representative Pugh's question. Representative Metza.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, I wanted to point out, too, I've been, you know, working on this for a little while now and trying to think of, in at least my short life now at 32, all the jobs I've had where I actually set my own pay. And when I was a self-employed painter working my way through college was the only time that I've been able to do that. And so I think, you know, I've been trying to think of other fields where you can do the same, and none come to mind. So I think that's, you know, another reason that this should be addressed. And, you know, it's just not something that many people are doing, and we aren't self-employed here. We're employed by the great people of Minnesota, so I think they deserve to be able to get a say in what our compensation is.
Representative Pepin, do you have any further questions? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Metza, could you just run through again with me the how the committee will be put together and the appointing by the Supreme, just the Chief Justice, Supreme Court gets to appoint members, and so does the governor get to appoint members. Am I correct on that?
Yep. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative O'Driscoll, yes, you are correct in that. So basically, the governor and the chief justice would appoint four people each from the House, and feel free to chime in if I'm off on this, Mr. Shepard. And then the governor and chief justice, so it would be of the majority party and then of the minority party with even numbers in each, but each picking four on that committee from each congressional district. So. And then with that, there is, and I'll ask Mr. Shepard to explain some of the technicalities of it, but we did put in some clarifying language in case Minnesota has a change in congressional districts, and this would allow for the Constitution to be, or this bill to be in good enough shape to allow for those adjustments without having to be re-brought in as a constitutional amendment again. So we're looking out for those small little things that might come up. And I know we've discussed it in recent history here as one of the states that might have been on the chopping block this last couple of years. So did you want to add that, Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Shepard?
Okay.
He's shaking his head. Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Representative Metza. How many people will be on the committee then after the appointments have been made?
Would it be 16 currently?
So if you had an 8-8 tie, Representative Metza, excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Metza, we would have a deadlock, so there's no way that we would be able to break a tie on this if there was one.
Representative Metza.
I believe the intent is for them to come out with someone, you know, changing their mind, and kind of like a jury where you aren't going to get it unless you got the majority there. And, you know, if a tie comes in, then I guess they got to go back, do a little bit more work, and look for that extra vote.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Metza, we know that the governor is an appointed, an elected office as well, and so the governor would be able to pick and choose whoever the governor wanted on there. Do you in any way see that this could become politicized by the governor's choices in trying to leverage the legislature at some point on a particular bill or a particular budget or a particular tax limit or how taxes might be raised? And I'm using those as examples because we're currently sitting in a situation where power is vested in one party right now, in the House, the Senate, and the governor's office. And there's an old adage, governors usually get what they want. Do you see that in any way this gives the governor's office any more leverage over the legislature when the governor gets to set the salaries and pick at least 50% of the members on the committee?
Representative Metza.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I actually think we addressed that in here as well. It's going to be 50-50 with the two majority parties, whether that be Republican, Democrat, Independent, or any other out there. And so the two parties with the most votes in that last election would maintain equal representation on this committee. And I think, you know, one of my favorite parts about working on it over the weekend actually was removing former legislators and current legislators and former lobbyists and current lobbyists from being allowed on the board. And so I think, you know, we take a lot of the politics out of it right there, and these will be actual citizens that live out in our communities that, you know, aren't down here at the Capitol necessarily working with us on a day-to-day basis.
Representative Ruskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Metz, I share some of the same concerns. We're 7 days or 8 days, 7 days. I don't know how many days we have left. Not very many. I can count them on my two hands. But I'm wondering, and I understand that the original bill was introduced earlier and you redid it and resubmitted it, but obviously there's a design here by the majority in order to bring this through. It appears to me that that there isn't the political courage in the House to do what the Senate did within the majority party, and that this is another way to do it, to get the pay increase, because as was said by a couple of members earlier, I think this will result in a pay increase if it's adopted by the voters. I struggle not only with the fact that this shouldn't be our priority right now. Our priority should be getting the budget bills out of conference committee, figuring out which billions of dollars of taxes you guys are going to raise on Minnesotans, and get that discussion going on the floor so that we can get a budget solved here. And this, I don't know, I've already heard from the public. They already believe that not only did we vote on raising salaries, but they've already been raised, and every member of the legislature is complicit in that vote. That's what the belief is out there now. So it's very interesting. You know, I'm not sure you want to go here, but anyway, a couple questions. First of all, line 1.15, and it was an effort here to try to create some sort of balance politically, apparently, among this commission, must belong to the political party that has the most members in the legislature, and then the other half has to belong to the other political party. How are you going to ensure which political party they belong to? You know, we don't have party registration in Minnesota, so there's no way to, you know, objectively find out whether people truly do belong to the party that they assert that they do. And I think many of us around here, if not all of us, have examples of talking to election judges and local precinct officers as they attempt to fill in either the Democrat election judge or the Republican election judge. And sometimes I've heard stories where they flip a coin in order to decide which party you are today. And so this is strictly going to be, I mean, this is almost going to be, you know, the person is going to claim allegiance to a particular political party that has an opening. I think there's a fatal flaw in that part of the design of the bill. I don't think it works, and I'd encourage you to think of something else there, because that's problematic. A question, line 1.20, the membership terms, removal, and compensation of members shall be as provided by law. Have we talked about what exactly that is? Do we know what their terms, how they're removed, and how they're compensated according to law currently? Maybe Mr. Shepard has that answer. Maybe you guys already covered it.
I'll get Mr. Shepard to answer the question, but Representative Ruskowski, I also have been door knocking, and people think I make what our congressmen make, which is way more than we make. I think if you could add a one in front of what we make and what our congressmen make, and they think that's what we're making here. So yeah, they think we've all given ourselves pay raises every year, when in reality we haven't. There hasn't been one in the legislature since I think 99. So anyway, Mr. Shepard, if you can answer his question.
Mr. Chair and Representative Ruskowski, this is a new council that would be constitutionally created if approved by the voters, and so there is nothing currently in law that would specify the membership terms, removal, and compensation of the members of this council. So the legislature would be free to do that if the voters approved this constitutional amendment.
Well, Representative Ruskowski.
All I can say is, well, Mr. Chair, I think that's there's a fatal flaw to the approach here, Representative Metz. for the opponents of this proposal, should it go out there, a huge and immediate cloud of uncertainty or doubt would be formed among the voters. I think when this council is going to be formed by this particular proposal, and they haven't even decided how the council is going to be termed in terms of membership terms or removal, and how much they're going to be paid. That would be yet to be decided by the legislature. So, thank you, Mr. Shepherd and Mr. Chair and Representative Metzer.
Well, I guess, Mr.
Representative Metzer,
Representative Druskowski. I guess what comes to mind for me actually is a bill we just addressed, the workers' comp bill that Representative Mahoney carried, and you know, I think that's a great example of a board that's appointed by seats above our pay grade anyway, that works in a bipartisan fashion but is partisanly appointed. So, you know, I think that there could be trouble with a number of agencies or different things around the state, but I think, you know, overall when we're tasked with specific language to be bipartisan and inclusive of both parties, that it would be in the best interest of the person or people doing the appointments to follow that as closely as possible. And I think, you know, to touching in on what Representative Kahn had said, that this would be something that could get discussed throughout the year. And as Mr. Shepherd was saying, we could look at putting in some rules in place next year after a conversation has been out there and the public has had a thorough chance to vet this.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Druskowski.
Just one quick comment. Thank you, Representative Metzo, because, you know, I think, you know, maybe that's the approach to take, because it would certainly follow the approach that's been taken to this point, where we've got something that's flying by the seat of our pants at the very end of session when we should be taking care of the budget.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I can wait until we get to the A5 amendment or whatever, one of the other amendments.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Shepherd, I have a procedural question I think you might be able to help with, and it relates to the Supreme Court. Is the Supreme Court justice elected as a Supreme Court justice, or are they appointed? The Supreme Court justice.
Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair and members, it would depend. I think if there were a vacancy, then if a vacancy occurs in the middle of a term, a governor gets to appoint somebody to fill the remainder of the term, and then the person would run for re-election at the completion of that term, and that has typically been the most common procedure. So they are often appointed initially and always must run for re-election at some point.
Mr. Shepherd, maybe I'm wrong, and it won't be the first time in my life that I've been wrong, but isn't currently doing, we just have one of our Supreme Court justices that ran for, without being appointed, and ran for and won that seat. I'm thinking of Justice Page. I think the rest of them have been appointed the way you described it. I think Justice Page ran and won an election without being appointed. Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair and members, that is my recollection, but like you, I'm not certain.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, then, Mr. Shepherd, I am correct in saying that the Supreme Court justice could be appointed by the governor, who is also going to have the authority to appoint people on this commission. So the governor could have appointed the chief justice, and the governor could also have appointments, and the chief justice that the governor appointed was also going to have appointments. Nobody around this table thinks that's got any political ramifications. Let's get real. That has huge political ramifications as to who the governor is, and we're vesting a lot more power in the hands of the governor, and I'll just tack those onto my previous comments and previous statements. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer an oral amendment when it's appropriate as well.
Representative O'Driscoll, I'll state your oral amendment. And
well, given the fact that on lines 2.1 through 2.3, it would be the ballot question, and I'll start on line 2.2. Set their own salaries, comma, and instead establish a citizen-only council. Insert the words appointed by the governor and Supreme Court justice to prescribe salaries for legislators. So the words I'm looking to insert would be appointed by the governor and chief justice of the Supreme Court.
And where would you be setting those in?
Those would be in between the words council and the word two on line 2.2.
I'll make sure Mr. Shepherd has that. And so, Mr. Shepherd, if you want to read that, how that line would read then, the whole, why don't you read the whole paragraph? The shall of the Minnesota Constitution be amended to remove legislators' ability to set their own salaries, and then, and instead, you want to quote from there?
Mr. Chair, it would then read, and instead establish a citizens-only council appointed by the governor and the chief justice of the Supreme Court to prescribe salaries for legislators.
Representative O'Driscoll, is that what you intended?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I think that that helps to provide a more clear summary of what the proposed Section 9 was driving to do.
Any discussion, members? Representative Metza. Representative Falk, I see you had your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess, you know, if it weren't the governor or the Supreme Court making these appointments, who would it be? Is there a potential or alternative? Or, I mean, I don't remember, you know, O'Driscoll could clarify further what he's aiming to achieve.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Falk, I'm not really aiming to achieve anything except clarity that the constitutional amendment that we're considering here in the last 8 days of the session talks about the governor and the Supreme Court justice would appoint. And as I look at what the ballot question would be, I think it's incomplete as to process. All it does is adds maybe 8 or 10 words that provides much more clarity for what is the substantial portion of the bill, who has the authority to be able to do that. To the question, who would have the authority to do that, if not those two people? If this were to become law, they would. All we're doing is telling the voters who the decision makers would be on that. Currently, right now, in the Minnesota State Constitution, under Article 4, Section 9, it already has a system prescribed pretty clear that the legislature shall, from time to time, make those kinds of considerations and puts the time frame in there. And again, we have that authority. The governor has the ability to sign or to veto a bill. So I think it's way that the system is set in place right now works very well. Checks and balances. Here we're bringing in the Supreme Court. Again, Chief Justice could be appointed by the governor. The governor who gets to make some appointments, it could become very political. And I don't think we resolve or solve our issues. And now it's embedded in the Constitution. And we've had many discussions on those and the costs associated with those and promoting ballot questions and the like. So I just think that adds some simple clarification for the voter when he or she goes to the poll.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being out, but I would oppose an amendment that adds that additional language and clause to the question that would go in front of voters. And I think, Representative O'Driscoll, if you look at an amendment I'll be offering later, in terms of simplicity, it can achieve maybe your goal, but I would oppose adding a substantial clause to the question that's put before the voters.
Representative Winkler.
Pass again.
Representative Metza, what's your feeling on the amendment?
You know, I think that if this is out there at 2014, that there would actually be enough time. And I have seen Representative Hansen's amendment, and I believe that's the A-10, correct? And Representative Driscoll, if you wouldn't mind taking a look at that, I'd be inclined to say that, you know, I'd rather see the voters get the gist of what this is doing, not who's doing it. And I think we'll have, you know, well over a year to have a discussion of how it's happening, who's going to do it, and, you know, maybe even potentially again next year should the council get voted on in 2014 or the following year, we could start working on, you know, some of the language, assuming that it passed, to clarify some of the rules and so on and so forth you were talking about for the council. So I'd be inclined to say
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I quite frankly surprised by the opposition to this. I know that when the two constitutional amendments that were on the ballot in 2012, there was great angst by the Secretary of State's office in trying to figure out how to title this, those two amendments, and putting them on. This simply clarifies bright line as to what's happening, who's involved, and it should make titling very, very simple at this point if we were to have that clarification. And any voter who goes into the polling place, goes into the booth and sees this, will have a clear understanding exactly what's happening. And I think we'd like to have that type of transparency and clarity.
With that, seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the O'Driscoll oral amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion fails. The amendment fails. Motion is not adopted. Next, why don't we? So we're at that point. Why don't we start with the amendments? I have the A4 amendment. And members, do we know who offered the A4 amendment? If no one's going to claim it, we'll go. Let's
Mr.
go to
Chair.
Representative Winkler.
I don't know. I'm not going to offer the A4 amendment because I don't think it is complete and very clear. It looks more political than it is a policy answer. I think we need to probably consider this further. But Representative Metsa, I noticed that in the A3 you change compensation to salary in line 1.6, and or maybe, yeah, that should be right. And so I am concerned that if we put salary in this compensation council, we've done nothing to limit the ability of the legislature to invent all sorts of fanciful and creative ways of giving ourselves more money that are outside of this process, and we will not be providing an honest question on the ballot. And so per diem is one thing, but there's also the issues of health care, which I know is another subject of another amendment, pensions, housing, travel, communications, emergency lodging. And I don't know if other members are interested in this issue, but one thing that we could do is simply to say that the Compensation Council will fix all compensation except expense reimbursement, and the legislature can determine expense reimbursement so long as it is supplied with documentary evidence and a signature by the legislator that that's a legitimate expense. So we're not stuck in this issue of per diem payments where it's just kind of a number and it's a backdoor way of increasing salary historically and it's not really tied to any actual expense. That would be kind of a cleaner way, and I guess I'm interested in your thoughts as an author. I don't think the A4 accomplishes all of those things, even close to it, but I wonder your thoughts about that as an author.
Representative Metsa.
I would be definitely open to a discussion about that and happy if the committee has any suggestions or wants to work through some language now. Since we've got a rule waived, I'd be more than happy to address some of those concerns. I guess I'd defer to Mr. Shepard, unless there was any language in there that was supposed to be there for other purposes. I think that your intent would be what mine would be as well. So,
well, Mr. Chair, Representative Metsa, I don't think we can do that on the fly. I wouldn't ask Mr. Shepard to do that. I just think we have to find a way that if we're advertising this amendment as a way of separating the legislature from the compensation process, then we have to tie our own hands to find other channels of compensation in the future. Otherwise, we're not being honest with the voters. And so, I can see the legislature may need some flexibility on reimbursing expenses, but then there should be rules, and the legislator should actually have to say, this is a real expense, and I'm putting my name on the line to say that this is real, so that there's a trail if people want to investigate that subsequently. But anyway, I don't think we can do it on the fly, but it's an issue that I'd like us to address as this goes forward.
So, members, anyone going to offer the A4 amendment? If not, I'll go to the A4.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I drafted A4, A5, A6, and A7. I don't believe I'm going to offer any of them, but I concur with Representative Winkler on the on exactly kind of the whole area that he was talking about. Thank you.
Representative Saunders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and
thank you for bringing those points up, Representative Winkley. I agree with you. Just to be clear, Representative Metza, the language here deals strictly with salary and deals with no other forms of compensation. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members. To my understanding, it would directly deal with our salary, our per diem mileage, yep. And I believe we get paid back a few dollars a month for home phone expenses for home line. Would not be included in that. And Mr. Shepard, correct me if I'm missing anything.
Mr. Shepard shaking his head. Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree, and I'd add my two cents. I mean, I think if we're going to go in this direction, not sure that I necessarily. Maybe the merits of this are good. I don't like the idea of doing this in the final session. I think Representative Winkler brings up excellent points. I think if we're going to look at doing this sort of a reform to the compensation package or the salary of legislators and Senate members, that I think we should be taking more of a global approach at this and bringing everything into current practice and current discussion. So I'll just add my two cents there.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, there's a big line between salary or compensation, and I think that there's been something decided by the courts or someone about what that definition is. But much of the things that are being talked about right now in this discussion that started with the A4 have to do with reimbursements. In my mind, not compensation or salary. And to give you an example, in the companies that I own, when I send someone out on the road, they get reimbursed for their mileage like we do. And right now, we have to sign a document. You know, we have to do that. But we sat here. I sat in a committee, and I've been sitting here struggling with trying to remember which one it was when Mr. former Controller Schweitzer came before us. One of the committees that I served on, I just cannot remember which one. And we had rules. That's what it was. And we had this discussion about this exact same thing. And he started to tell us what it would mean that if rather than having per diem, some amount of per diem, that if we started providing receipts for meals and for parking and for other things that were associated with this and things of that nature, that it would be so overwhelming and so burdensome to the controller's office that they weren't sure in the scope of all of the things that happen as a legislator. For example, if you had phone bills from 200, well, let's just use 134 in the House, phone bills that had each and every what percentage of the phone that you used at home. Right now, we get paid, I believe it is $75 a month towards phone use, which could be your home, your cell phone, and all of those things. And, I mean, he just painted this picture of an unruly and unburdensome practice within, in a practical nature. And so, great discussion, but I remember that long, drawn-out discussion with regards to these things. The point of the previous committee that I served on, and we had this discussion.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, I bet if your employees came to you and suggested that when they're traveling they just get $100 a day and then they can worry about how much money they're spending, and they gave you that option versus having to reimburse based on actual expenses, you'd probably stick with the actual expense model.
Okay. Representative Dill.
Well, actually, Representative Winkler, it's exactly what I do. Is I pay them so much a day for housing, a lump sum, and then they receive a check for that. So if they're on the road for 7 days, then I pay them plus the mileage. And then they keep their own receipts, and then any difference between the two, they are responsible for reporting that. And that way they receive a lump sum per day, and it happens to be one. For the housing is on a direct reimbursement, but all the other expenses are $100 a day per person that traveling, and then they are responsible. for providing legitimate expenses.
And Representative Dill, I know in contracts that I'm aware of that I've helped negotiate, we have dollars amounts in there for people have to work out of town. And again, they have to keep those receipts for themselves because if the IRS comes and audit them, then the IRS is on, if you don't spend that much, if you spend less than that or you're not spending it at all, then you could get nicked on that as part of your salary. But they have to keep that. And so, I mean, that's they're keeping, you know, you're given a dollar amount per day that you go out and you have to keep those receipts yourself. Representative Winkler.
And Mr. Chair, I mean, but the point is it is on a reimbursement basis. The idea is that it's supposed to be reimbursed based on actual expenses, not just sort of a ballpark number thrown out there, and it's kind of up to you how much you want to take of that.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dill.
To make it very clear, I have the ballpark number. That's what I pay them, a ballpark number, and then they are responsible for maintaining that amount. And further, to add one more thing in my practices, is I do not pay them any expenses for lodging or hotel, and I got this, frankly, because of the 50-mile idea of here at the state capitol. I changed the entire thing around because we had this burdensome problem at the companies of all these of a Visa card and all the receipts and the people getting the receipts attached to it and then someone verifying it, and all of that burden now has been shifted to the employee, and they're fine with it. Now, in our case, we receive per diem that's based, I believe it's in federal law, and we only get a percentage. I mean, we decide what our per diem is up to the maximum of the, is it, I'd ask Mr. Shepard, isn't there something in there about federal law, the maximum amount? I know at tax time, Mr. Chairman, we get a statement from the controller's office to say this is the maximum amount that we can receive per day. I'm going to pick a number. It's like $159 a day per diem, and for housing, and it's on your tax. It comes right from the controller. It's on a two-page sheet, and then the tax accountant looks at what you received and what you could have received, and the difference between the two is a deduction to the member, an actual deduction on your tax return to the member as an unreimbursed expense. And I mean, if you'll remember, Representative Junkie and I have gone over this time and time again in the Rules Committee. Representative Pepin left. And we talked about this. We got rulings from Mr. Schweitzer on this. And if you don't, now, if you live within 50 miles of the Capitol, I don't think that applies to you. Because then your per diem is taxed. But remember, rural members do not get taxed per diem, like Representative Drzowski. His per diem, whatever portion that he claims, no federal withholding is received because you live outside the 50 miles. So anyway, just down a trip down memory lane from all these meetings that I've...
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we're a little bit afield, but I think it's important because this is part of the debate and discussion here. I want to take people back to the old movie Raiders of the Lost Ark when they were in the salt mine with all the government documents. And, you know, Representative Dill, I understand what you're saying, but it's not just burdensome. There's a cost. And when I was a supervisor in state government, the labor contracts had X amount for breakfast, X amount for lunch, X amount for supper. And if you happen to take a trip to a conference in Chicago, it was in certain metropolitan areas in the labor contract, it said more because you're going to pay more in some of those areas when you go to there. So if you require the sign-off, if you require the receipts, not only do they go to your supervisor who has to spend time checking them, and to the comptroller who has to check them, but they go into a data practices records retention schedule for 7 years, and they're kept somewhere in those salt mines, and someone's managing them, and there's a cost there to the public. To chase the penny, you spend the dollar by doing that. And it seems like every time we address this issue, somebody says, well, let's, and we're doing it now on our, when our with our reimbursements, is let's sign off and let's bring in receipts and do all that. And the cost is there, and it goes back and forth, back and forth. We implement it, and then it goes back, and then we implement it, and it goes back because there's a cost there. And so it gets to this issue of compensation, which the Representative Metz's bill, there are private sector examples. There is the public sector example. And this legislature turns over, so we keep having this debate year after year after year, and the same discussion year after year, and that's the people's right by electing people. But to move it to an independent professional board who can say this is the reality in the world where we're looking at cost, we're looking at professionalism, we're looking at what's the best way to do it to provide that public disclosure for the public and for the elected officials. I think that's why we need to do this. Now, maybe as this moves through the process, you get to some of these other issues, but we're debating the exceptions here rather than the question of the salary and the question of who makes the decision. The Constitution Amendment that's in front of us is that somebody else will make the decision, not us. That's the intent here. And somebody else, that's the question for maybe later on as this moves through the public debate, these other issues, who else makes the decision and what do they make the decision on?
Representative Metsa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, you know, I am enjoying this conversation here, and idea I would have, I think, would be that maybe the committee here that we're talking about could make a recommendation. It's my understanding we address the per diem here in rules at the beginning of every session, and maybe that this committee also, maybe to simply address it, make a recommendation to the legislature, and then we could, you know, address that at the same time.
Representative Wink.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Metz, I just want to restate again. If we sell this ballot question as drafted, which I think is fine, as somehow removing the ability of the legislature to set its own compensation, and we sort of use a sleight of hand and say salary instead of compensation, I think it is dishonest. I think the ballot question is dishonest if we're creating the impression that we're giving this power to somebody else. So to the extent that we retain the power ourselves, I do think that we need to have a limit on what we can do. And we can debate about sort of whether you put the burden on the legislator or on the controller staff in order to determine whether or not these are legitimate expenses. But if you want to retain the power of the legislature to set its own reimbursement, it has to be, in my mind, based on some actual expense. And, you know, I, you know, hear echoes of things I don't like to echo, but never in my experience outside of the legislature has there been anything other than a reimbursement for your actual expense and nothing else. And you have to sign it to say this was my actual expense. I think that's the standard we should hold ourselves to.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is one, I mean, where I, you know, really respect Representative Winkler's perspective, but, you know, there is some issue with separation of powers here, too. And, you know, there is a limit to how much the judicial or executive branch can go and influence the operations of the legislative branch. I mean, that's clearly spelled out in our Constitution. So, I mean, I understand that, you know, while narrowly defined, maybe the only way we're able to go with this, because when you start impacting the functionality of the legislative branch, the legislative branch can only be responsible for that. To address some of the concerns, perhaps, that Representative Winkler and others have brought up, we have a Rules Committee which could already, right now, put in place, you know, those requirements of which were being debated and would not have to be in a constitutional amendment or in the Constitution, but could just be in the rules process or the rules established in the governance of the legislative bodies.
So, members, going down the amendments here, I have an A8 amendment. Somebody want to claim the A8? Representative Druskowski.
Mr. Chair, I have the A8 and the A9, and I'm not going to offer either of those either.
Okay. Members, then I have the A10 amendment. I believe that's Representative Hansen that he said earlier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wonder if there needs to be a comma after the word independent, just looking at the question, to make it grammatically correct.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, yeah, I think the comma would be fine there.
After the word independent?
Mr. Chair, yes.
So it'd be an independent comma. So Representative Hansen modifies his amendment to add the comma after independent to make it grammatically correct. So, Representative Hansen, you move your amendment as is modified?
I move the A10 amendment.
Representative Hansen moves the A10 amendment as modified. Members, any questions? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, for putting the word independent in there, you had indicated that maybe that will take away some of my concerns. My question is, how can we have on the question independent, but then cite selecting from politically affiliated parties and persons in the proposed language for the constitutional amendment?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, so I didn't have it as an independence, comma, but independent, and my purpose on independent would be that we're having the governor and the chief justice, so it would be the other representatives, the chiefs of the two other branches of government, not the legislative branch. So it's independent from the legislative branch. Again, going back to taking it completely out of the legislature's hands. That was my intent.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So maybe I'm not reading this right in the amendment. Perhaps Mr. Shepard could just help us with that when he gets a moment here.
Mr. Shepard, there's a question here about if you want to repeat, Representative O'Driscoll, if you want to repeat your question.
Mr. Shepard, on line 2.2, after the comma and salaries, my understanding with the proposed Hansen Amendment, it would read, and instead establish, remove the word A and insert an independent, comma, citizens-only council. What does independent refer to?
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members said, I apologize, I was in a discussion earlier. I didn't hear the rest of the discussion, and so I would certainly yield to the author of the amendment. As I read it, I would read that clause independent as being independent from legislators' ability to set their own salaries in the prior clause. So I think probably the best, in my view, the best interpretation would be independent of the legislature.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, the only thing I would really like to do is offer my oral amendment again, because I think that just provides us more clarity, but I will refrain from doing that. And we know that governors have an awful lot of influence on legislation here at the legislature, and so I think it's important that people get a chance to see that, but I'm not going to stand in the way of Representative Hansen's proposed amendment.
Any further discussion? Representative Sanders. Any further discussion on the amendment? All in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The motion's passed. The amendment's adopted. Members, now we're to the bill as amended. Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Metza, I just want to make sure that I understand this correctly. On line 1.21 and 1.22, so, in practice, this council, let's say that this was in effect, on March 31st of this year, this council would have prescribed a salary change that would go into effect starting this July 1st, if this was in action. Is that correct?
Yes.
That is correct, Representative Sanders.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Metza, we have a scenario where in the middle of a term, legislators' pay is being changed. Is that correct?
Representative Metza.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sanders, I guess that's if the council were to change the pay, correct?
Representative Sanders.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I just have some heartburn over this issue. I don't know that this is the best language that we could put forward on this. And Representative Metza, I come to know you a little bit. I think you're a great legislator, and it's obviously a big change. And I think that we just might need a little more time on this. And I look at, you know, we're changing salaries in the middle of a term. We have the heads of the two other branches creating a committee that has power over the legislature. And I know that the framers, the authors of the Federalist Papers, specifically talked about this and specifically prevented the Congress and the executive branch from having power over the ability to change the pay of the judiciary, because they believe that those who held power over their sustenance held power over their will. And we're not just talking about going into the next term or after a legislative session, but literally during the middle of a legislative term. We're talking about salaries potentially having the ability to change. And I don't know that that's a good thing, and I don't know that we necessarily need to relegate power that we have away to another body. I think that if we think that pay should be addressed, I know it's a tough political issue, but I think there are things that we could do to help alleviate that. Maybe you bump it out 4 years and remove even more scrutiny from the public by saying, this is going out 2 terms. You know, I think there's a lot of different things we can do. At this point, this just seems a little fast, seems a little bit, you know, maybe just not quite right. And some of the members that I, reasons that I just listened, also I think that for the most part, if they're going to talk about salary, they should be talking about all the compensation. Maybe, and rural and metro is very different, obviously, but, you know, maybe we don't need $66 a day in per diem. Maybe we just need a higher salary. Maybe that's not true. I don't know. But I think that just looking at the salary is just a sliver of the pie when it looks at what each member has to deal with, and also in the accountability to the public. I know if you ask most of the public what per diem is, it's a way to pad your salary. That's what most of the public thinks. So I think that this compensation council, if you want to go that direction, should probably look at all of that. But again, I have big problems with, you know, a panel that's created by the heads of the two other branches being able to change our salary during the middle of a term.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'll just reiterate some things that Representative Sanders and Representative Winkler pointed out. You know, we... if we go with the language the way it is, I mean, line 1.6, the author strikes compensation and replaces it with salary. It may be better to go back to compensation as a total group for this, you know, as a full package for this particular commission to consider, so that as Representative Winkler said, so we're honest to the people. Otherwise, what we're going to end up with is the legislature giving itself another per diem on top of whatever type of adjustment this council does. So I don't know that this approach is going to yield us the most honest product. So I'll be voting against the bill. Thank you.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sanders, your comments about the different branches of government having power, I am interested in the date of those changes, but under current arrangements, the governor and the legislature determines the courts, the judges' salaries, and that has never been used as a political retribution tool, although it could be. If the Supreme Court had a majority of Republican appointees and there was a DFL governor and a DFL legislature, and we didn't like what the current Supreme Court had ruled on a particular issue, in theory, we could have some kind of retribution by reducing their salary. Obviously, that's never, at least not in modern times, happened, so I'm a little bit less concerned about that. And this is one step removed by putting those folks in charge. And so, likewise, the governor and the entire administrative branch, their salaries, obviously, they have to be passed into law and signed by the governor. But the legislature has a clear role in setting that as well. So we already have kind of a mixed system for determining compensation like this. And so it seems to me that in general, we've got a kind of a culture of politics in the state that would make a move like that probably pretty rough on whoever the elected official was who tried to use their position and abuse it in that way. So I'm fairly trusting. I think maybe the question of when it would take effect is probably a better question, and say that it could only take effect at some future time, whether it's January 1st of the following year. I think that lessens the likelihood that it would be used in kind of an immediate sense as a negotiating tool.
Any further questions? Anybody from the audience that needs to speak for or against this bill? If not, Representative Metz, a wrap up?
I just wanted to thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members for short notice of having this hearing, and would again like to state that, you know, I believe we've got a couple other stops this week. Any suggestions you do have today, I think Representative Sanders, O'Driscoll, Pepin, and many others on my side brought up some really good points, and I would look forward to addressing them on the continuing committee hearings that will be coming up, and more than open to having any offline discussions with anyone interested in giving input into this at any time. So, again, thank you for having me here today, and I hope that you'd support my bill going the next stop.
Okay, members, all in favor of House File 1823 as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The ayes have it. The bill is passed. The motion is passed. The bill is referred. And members, with that, we approved the minutes before. And yes. Representative Pepin, you caught that, and they were correct.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
When will our next government operations meeting be? So I can prepare my calendar.
Just saying.
With that, the committee's adjourned.